Hello, and thanks for joining us on The Week in Review. I'm Amanda Vinicky. It's high-stakes showtime for Chicago.
We've been working for over a year to build the figurative and now literal stage for our party and our nominees.
The Democratic National Convention kicks off Monday.
Electricity as we know it, that exists today, came into light literally right here in Chicago. And now, in a week from now, the city will be electrified again when they send a woman to the White House.
Scores of Democrats are headed to the city to rally behind Kamala Harris's bid for the White House.
And I welcome the 50,000 people that will converge on Chicago.
Some predict there will be double that amount of protesters. Police say exercising free speech is sanctioned. However,
violent attacks against the police, against each other, against our citizens, that's the type of thing that we're not going to tolerate.
Republicans had promised another surge of migrants.
And we have continued busing migrants to sanctuary cities across the entire country. And those buses will continue to roll.
But that hasn't happened.
I'm hoping is that people will see that we do not have migrant encampments across the city, that we do not have a homelessness problem with new arrivals.
The presidential candidates are on the campaign trail promising voters economic wins.
Building up the middle class will be a defining goal of my presidency.
So when I win, I will immediately bring prices down starting on day one.
Meanwhile, just as school set to start, Mayor Brandon Johnson's reportedly looking to oust the superintendent of Chicago Public Schools. A court orders prisoners out of Stateville Correctional Center. President Joe Biden designates the site of Springfield's 1908 race riot as a national monument.
So our children, our grandchildren, everybody understands what happened and what can still happen.
And Riot Fest makes an unexpected return to Douglas Park. Our Week in Review panel this week, we've got some stars. Sam Hielopoulos from WBEZ, Tiffany Walden, editor-in-chief of The Tribe, Hannah Meisel from Capital News Illinois, and Quinn Myers, Block Club Chicago. Now let's get right to it. We are just a couple of days away from the start of the Democratic National Convention. Tiffany, what are your expectations for next week?
You know, we're expecting a lot. We're preparing for everything. But I think that we're going to see two different things at play. We're going to see a historic moment where we see a black woman presumably accept the Democratic ticket. And we're also going to see a lot of protest and demands from organizers who are looking for the Democratic Party to meet them in their demands in terms of a ceasefire, in terms of reparations, in terms of some of the other needs of the city. So I think we're going to see two different sides of the spectrum.
I want to delve into the protest element in just a bit, but Dan, let's go to you briefly, and I'm going to pose that same question. What are your expectations for next week, particularly as we look at the politics here?
Yeah, I think we need to be ready for anything, and I do think that there will be large protests from, you can say the far left, you can say pro-Palestinian groups. There are different groups. Some are saying that it's going to be family friendly, the main march on Monday. Others are using somewhat more inflammatory language. Big questions of how the Chicago police will handle it. Will they do better than they did in 2020 with the protests after George Floyd's killing in Minneapolis? A lot of big questions are out there, and I do think that a lot of that could impact how things look for the Democratic Party as they try to use this as a springboard to keep the White House in November.
What do you mean by that? I want to get into really the stakes. There's so much that is being made about these protests, how big they are, how much is on the line for Chicago. Let's get to that in a second. But what is on the line for the Democratic Party?
The Democrats want to show that they're united. Any party would want to do that going into a fall presidential election and other elections that are on the ballot. They want to show that they're united. The other party wants to a showcase for divisions within the Democratic Party. I think Donald Trump is praying for trouble in Chicago and would relish it. And we already have some right-wing influencers and others in Chicago trying to key on immigration, trying to key on Gaza, and trying to really point to the divisions within the Democratic Party so it's not united going into
Quinn.
In the meantime, I'm curious how our local leaders are going to sell the city of Chicago to the nation. I think we're going to hear some pretty, some interesting rhetoric, some very boosterish rhetoric. But what are they going to be talking about, and what are they not going to be talking about? You know, we've heard a lot about migrant crises, a lot, you know, citizens, residents here dealing with gun violence. Probably not going to hear too much about those issues. I think we're going to talk about Chicago being open for business and being a great place to, live, work, and play. That might be the extent of it. I'm curious to see Brandon.
You're talking about these big stage speeches that, for example, Mayor Brandon Johnson set to take the stage on Monday, Governor J.B. Pritzker on Tuesday. They're going to try to show the city and state in its best light.
Absolutely. Mayor Brandon Johnson at his press conference today gave a little preview of talking about his family coming from the South, coming to the Midwest, and coming to Chicago, and how anything is possible here. I think that could be a common theme that we end up seeing at the DNC. And for Pritzker, that's probably a similar thing, although, this was supposed to be his big coming out party in some ways. I don't know if that's been diluted. Hannah can probably speak more to that. But
Because of the fact that there is now no longer Joe Biden at the top of the ticket, the president stepping down to make way for the vice president?
I think that is a huge, and also his own, ambitions as well. I think maybe, he was
took the fire out
of some of that. So I'm curious to see what his speech looks like.
Hannah, did we get a preview of this at all this week? Because we had both Democrats and the Illinois Republican Party in Springfield. This is traditionally sort of the kickoff to campaign season. This year is a little different, of course. But what preview did we get?
Democrats are, I've never seen such a large crowd of Democrats out at the state fairgrounds. Traditionally for the last 10 years, we cover it together. Usually, Democrats will have this large breakfast in Springfield, and then if they go out to the fairgrounds, it's like a nothing thing, but many more than I've seen in the 11 years I've been doing this. Democrats, like Dan said, they want to show that they're united, because just, not even a month ago, they were very, very divided. More people coming out every single day trying to push Joe Biden to step aside, which he finally did, of course. They want to capitalize on this opportunity that they have to look united, to look like they're all pushing toward a common goal, and they want to capitalize on the boost that Kamala has gotten in the polls. We saw a New York Times poll this week that, showed that she is up in these key Rust Belt states, the Michigan, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania. And
a reverse of what the polls had been showing when
exactly.
Biden was the nominee. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to get back to you in just a second. But Dan, why have we seen such a flip? Is it Vice President Harris herself? Is it that voters are just sick of the old guard? Why this change?
Well, there was a large number of people, Democrats, that wanted Joe Biden out. They didn't believe that if they elected him in November, not to be ageist or anything, that he would be able to do a job in all the way through the term when he's 86 at the end of that term, much less even now, given that debate performance, which was, I think, a huge, huge game changer. But let's not forget, this is really an unprecedented move to swap your top of the ticket, your standard bearer at this stage. Kamala Harris and also her running mate, Tim Walz, may be in something of a honeymoon phase that remains to be seen. If that extends through the November election, they continue to build on this bounce that they've gotten. No doubt, I think the DNC should give them a bounce if things, stay calm. And if it's not like 1968 here in Chicago, and we always have that specter looming whenever we have a convention here in Chicago. So I think that it remains to be seen whether she can maintain or even build on that advantage. Right now, Trump is trying to recalibrate and deal with a new reality. And, his whole message before was Biden is no longer capable up here, of doing the job.
Quinn, you're trying to jump in.
Well, Trump has not really defined Kamala Harris as his opponent yet in this race, and she hasn't really defined herself very much. We still don't know too much about her platform, her policies. We heard her give an economic speech today with a few proposals, but she hasn't given a sit-down interview with any reporter yet. I know maybe just the press cares about that, but I think that is important to hear, nail down and push her on specifics, and we haven't had that yet. So that kind of generic Democratic candidate, she's benefiting from that in the polls, I think.
And Hannah, again, at the state fair, what sort of message did you hear? Beyond unity, is there a line of attack that Democrats and then, of course, Republicans are taking?
Well, Democrats, they want, especially because it was J.B. Pritzker's efforts to bring the DNC to Chicago. He wants to highlight this so-called blue wall that he refers to Illinois as, not just for abortion rights, but for things like organized labor, as we've seen, you know, more and more states in the last decade and a half turn to right-to-work states. You know, he wants to join forces with organized labor and say, you know, we are a union-friendly state. There are all of these, you know, progressive ideas that the governor's tried to push, especially in, you know, we're halfway through almost his second term. You know, he is trying to make Illinois is so often in national politics kind of ignored because it's a given, it's a blue state, you know, not a battleground state.
Flyover territory, too.
Exactly, exactly.
Flyover, in quotes.
But, you know, I think Democrats want Illinois to make a bigger impact, like, you know, decades ago, Illinois had a much more, you know, you could say, impact on national politics. And we just don't have that anymore.
Tiffany.
I think we still do have it, too. I think that a lot of states and different cities across the country look up to Chicago. At least in my travels, people have talked about, you know, the organizers of Chicago are doing this. They've talked about how State's Attorney Kim Fox has done so many reforms and has led the country in some of the criminal justice reforms. The Safety Act, we're one of the first states, if I'm correct.
Certainly. The first state to completely do away with cash bail.
Yeah, so I think that, you know, the thing that holds us back, as Hannah was mentioning, is like having that mainstream recognition. And for some reason, we always, you know, we don't get that shine.
Tiffany, sticking with you, what are you going to be listening for as you watch this big show on stage next week?
I'm really interested to see if they're going to address the ceasefire demands. I think one of Cook County in itself is one of the largest Palestinian communities and Arab communities in the country. And folks are taking the streets to protest for, you know, a ceasefire and for, you know, to stop the funding of weaponry over in that area. And so I think, you know, we've seen VP Harris touch on it a little bit in some of her rallies. We've seen her deal with hecklers and protesters in those spaces, and she's adjusted, she's adapted, and figured out how to respond. But I wonder on this stage, you know, how will they address it, and also how will they address immigration?
Quinn, how about you? What are you going to be watching for?
Yeah, I think, you know, on the protest side, they're not going to let the Democratic Party forget about the demands mm-hmm. for the ceasefire. There are also protests surrounding reproductive justice. So I'm going to be out there covering these protests. I'm looking forward to seeing how effective their messaging is. You know, there's been a lot of back and forth, whether they can get permits, whether they can get stages, whether they can get amplified.
And there was some news on that front, by
the way,
today.
The city did grant some of the main organizers allowing them to have amplified sound and a stage in Union Park.
And porta potties? Why weren't they allowed to have porta potties and speakers in the first place?
That's a great question. I think there's been a huge back and forth here that, you know, even the judge, I think, said, why is this taking so long? Why did the city sit on these permit requests for so long? Valid question. You know, we are literally 3 days away, 2 days away from the DNC starting and the protest starting. So I don't know the exact reason, but yeah, I think I'm going to be looking to see if those demands, if those, you know, those new opportunities give them any new life, these protests, or if, you know, it'll be business as usual.
Well, especially when you talk about why did it take so long to, mm-hmm. to have the city grant these permits. We're not just talking about a few thousand. We're talking about 25,000 or more buses from many other states coming here to Chicago. You know, for the city to sit on, you know, those negotiations for so long, it really threw a wrench in the process. And also, you know, some people might have ended up with egg on their face, even though in the end, you know, this afternoon we heard from the main organizer saying, it was Mayor Brandon Johnson fighting for us.
Seems to me if you want an unruly crowd, don't give them a place to use the facilities when you're outside all day. I mean, there's just some basic stuff here. Dan, sorry.
Yeah, I mean, the bigger issue, I think, although I'm not putting aside, you know, the porta potty issue or the amplification issue, which the protesters declared victory on this afternoon. But I think the larger issue has been the route. Okay, they sure. want to be closer to the United Center than the city wanted them to be. The courts sided with the city on that one. The route is a mile long. You're talking about 20, 30,000 people. You know, the protesters, demonstrators are saying that's not going to be a large enough area. And then I spent some time this week with other demonstrators, pro-Palestinian demonstrators, called Behind Enemy Lines nearby here at their headquarters on Irving Park Road. And they're like, why do we need a permit at all? We, you know, they're calling for civil disobedience. And then the question is, where will the police draw the line? They've said we will not allow violence or vandalism. So basically property crime. I could see some property crime occurring. And then the question is, how is the police going to respond? Are they only going to respond to the people that are committing those acts, as that's what they're supposed to do? Are they going to sweep up a bunch of other people? And how will that escalate the situation potentially? And
the tribe's been reporting on
this. Yeah, we've reported on that too, and we covered 2020 as well. And you know, folks who have been around since 1968, we saw what the police did during 1968's convention and during the 1968 King uprisings. So there's a lot of questions here around, you know, how are the police going to respond to the protesters? Are they going to incite issues out there? We saw in 2020 where they were, you know, hitting people in over the head with batons. They knocked out an organizer's teeth at one of the organizing events. So a lot of the questions here is around, you know, how are the police going to police themselves?
Are there questions as to whether after, for example, Governor Pritzker tried so hard to land the Democratic National Convention that it's going to instead hurt Chicago and Illinois' reputation or even hurt Democrats' chances in this election?
I think if things remain relatively peaceful, I don't see it hurting Chicago and Illinois.
Is that a big if?
I don't know if it's a big if. I mean, we really, as Dan said, we don't know what's going to happen. I think politically, though, you know, why is the convention in Chicago? Why is it not in Atlanta or Milwaukee, where the Republicans had it, or Philadelphia, a swing state where you could actually, you know, show voters on the fence that you're there and you're in their communities? Chicago is a given for the Democrats. So I'm still, you know, puzzled. I kind of, you know, there are some behind-the-scenes stuff, obviously, that went into this, but I think politically, I don't know if it was the best choice for the Democrats. We'll see.
And then, Tiffany, you've also done some reporting, or the tribe has anyway, and frustrations that folks have that live near the United Center.
Yes, our reporter Coralie Jay was just out on the west side earlier last week, and residents were still confused about what was happening. They saw the parking sign saying that they couldn't park on their street. Folks don't have garages, so it's like, where are you supposed to park? And I went out there myself and walked around, and, you know, all the barricades. This is in the middle of a community, in the middle of, you know, a place where there's homes and kids and parks. And, you know, one of the security perimeter, there's only one way to get in. So how are people supposed to be able to access the community itself and to access any other emergency services that they may need? Because some of the hospitals are, you know, closing their clinics. Corley spoke with one resident who said she takes the bus to work, and now she has to go an extra mile around the way to try to get on the bus, and that's going to navigate her out the way to get to work.
If the bus shows,
because there's
a lot of questions as well about a lack of trust that is in the CTA and folks working from home, but not everybody has that opportunity. I want to move, because we've only got actually about 5 or so minutes left. There has been a movement as well from President Biden in the White House today, signing a proclamation that designates a national monument at the site of the 1908 race riots in Springfield. Now, Dan, you have done some research on this.
Yeah, I'm just kind of like to study history and
when it ties in with modern events, right?
Absolutely. I mean, Sonia Massey, who was shot by a sheriff's deputy in Sangamon County in Springfield recently, we all know about that. It's caught on body camera of another officer, I believe, and horrible national attention is being put on that incident. She's a descendant of one of the people, according to her family, of one of the people who was lynched in 1908, and he was, you know, a member of the black community in Springfield, which has been there really much since shortly after the Civil War. I think the large community there. It's a very segregated city, much like Chicago, on a much smaller scale, obviously, and they're going to designate some attention to that, along with the other monuments to Abraham Lincoln and whatnot that we go and see in Springfield on field trips.
Tiffany, how meaningful is this?
It's big. It's important to acknowledge this history, especially in this context where we have Republicans trying to erase history and trying to ban books and ban history and black history, particularly in schools. And so it's important to have these monuments. It's important to, as Dan mentioned, go on field trips and learn about black history in the same way that you learn about Abraham Lincoln and everyone else.
And another executive order signed by Biden limiting the number of migrants crossing from the southern border having an impact, Quinn, on Chicago.
Totally. We haven't seen a bus, I think, in almost 2 months come from the southern border. And it's kind of tied, it seems to be tied with that executive order limiting, severely limiting asylum seekers coming into this country, which was heavily criticized at the time, and I think still is by a lot of progressives and a lot of immigration advocates. But if you're looking at it through the lens of did it stop the flow of migrants coming to so-called sanctuary cities, it has made a huge difference. And the Chicago shelter population is about, at about 5,500 people living, new arrivals, and that is down last December, it was about 15,000. So it's down significantly.
And Hannah, briefly here, that's got to be huge as well for both the Johnson and Pritzker administrations that this is an issue.
That's right. I mean, you know, it's not like those two administrations have had an easy time when it comes to dealing with how to take care of these migrants. I think, you know, the extra pressure leading up to the DNC especially, but in general, I mean, we're talking about real human beings here. Let's never lose sight of that. You know, I think not having that tension between the mayor and the governor has been good for both of them. They can focus on other things. They can focus on delivering the services that they can to the folks that are here.
And there is, they say that they're going to be able to really show that Chicago has taken care of these individuals. Dan, now your organization has done some reporting on efforts by the mayor to get rid of the superintendent Pedro Martinez, head of CPS.
I find it really mystifying as someone that remembers when mayoral control was instituted, very controversial, under Richard M. Daley in the 90s. We're going on 30 years now of mayoral control. And now we have a mayor who comes from the teachers' union, but they can't get all on the same page with the school board, the CEO, who's, you know, wasn't handpicked by this mayor, but was kept by this mayor, right? There's a lot of disputes about how to finance the CPS contract with the teachers, with the unionized teachers going forward. So this could be it for yet another CEO, and we've seen so many of them come and go.
Tiffany, what are you hearing on this front? Is this sort of expected if you have a mayor who is very closely aligned with Chicago Teachers Union and they don't like Martinez, that this is the breaks or coming at school begins? Are people nervous?
You know, I think at the end of the day, the thing is about the kids. You know, what's not being discussed and what's not being uplifted in this conversation is how does this impact the students? How does how do these changes impact what their day-to-day lives are going to be in the school, in the learning environment? Do they have the resources that they need? So I think, you know, adults are doing adult things, but at the end of the day, I would like to see kids put at the forefront of this.
Quinn, let's end this with your take on the situation. So much of this is finances, but why do we have Martinez here still if there are signals that the mayor doesn't want him?
Well, it's complicated. You can't, the mayor technically can't just call him up and say you're gone. It has to go through the school board, which Johnson did appoint, but it seems like the school board is probably siding with Martinez or has sided with him on numerous items since they came into power. You know, at issue here are a high interest loan that's been proposed, a big pension payment. The city wants to shift back to CPS shifted back to the city under Lightfoot. So it's pretty complicated, but I don't think it's going to happen tomorrow. And the first day of school is 10 days away, so I don't think it's going to happen before then. And then there are a whole matter
contract
of contract repercussions, severance, firing for cause or without cause that really complicate this. It is not an overnight issue here.
We also have a school board election in Chicago for the first time looming. It's going to be a hybrid board. It's not going to be total mayoral control, which the union pushed for and many progressives pushed for. Now they're going to get it when they have a mayor from the union in the fifth floor of City Hall.
And we'll have to end it with that. Thank you so much for your perspective to each of you. Our thanks to Dan Mihalopoulos, Tiffany Walden, Hannah Meisel, and Quinn Myers. Join us next week for special coverage of the Democratic National Convention that we've been talking so much about. We'll be live at 5:30 and at 10 every night. We're going to go in depth on the Harris campaign and hear from some of Illinois' leading Democrats, as well as getting some Republican response. We will be back to wrap things up right after this.
Tonight's presentation of Chicago Tonight, Week in Review, is made possible in part by Ann and Rich Carr, BNSF Railway, Francine and Dr. Anthony Brown, and the Mullenhauer Progressive Philanthropic Fund, in honor of Ida Mullenhauer, supporting quality journalism. Chicago Tonight is made possible in part by the Alexandra and John Nichols family, the Polk Brothers Foundation, Additional support is provided by...
That's our show for this Friday night. Be sure to check out our brand new email newsletter, The Daily Chicagoan. We'll have the backstory on the biggest news of the day and insights into what defines our city. We'll also help you explore your own community and neighborhoods across Chicago. Head to WTTW.com/newsletter to subscribe. Now for the Week in Review, I'm Amanda Vinicky. Thanks for watching. Stay healthy and safe and have a good night. Now we've got to talk about Riot Fest, which left Chicago and now is coming back. Tiffany, what's up?
It's a slap in the face to the community and to the organizers that have fought for years to get Riot Fest out of the neighborhood. And so I can't believe that it's back in that way.
I was going to say, the alderwoman there said that North Lawndale has been clear Riot Fest's home is in Douglas Park. Quinn?
I don't know if that's been very clear. I think there have been numerous community activists from the North and South Lawndale, Little Village area, who do not want it there. But there are many fans who want this alternative festival with a lot of punk bands there in Douglas Park, too.
Was this a sign, the switch, that Bridgeview was not a place concert goers wanted to travel to?
We don't know the exact behind the scenes, but I can't imagine the tickets were flying off the proverbial shelf or wherever you store tickets.
Closed captioning is made possible by Robert A. Clifford and Clifford Law Offices, a personal injury law firm dedicated to preserving the dignity and rights of all individuals.